I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey everybody, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
This is my part. I'm Ben.
Good job, Ben.
All right.
You caught up right on schedule. And hey, you know what? I was just thinking, we've talked a lot about Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh, yeah.
How many inventions that guy came up with and just... unbelievable things, right? Things you wouldn't think that somebody in the 1500s would be able to come up with, right?
Oh, my God.
Scott, I mean, we're talking helicopter. What?
We can't do another Da Vinci episode, man.
No. We're talking about a different Da Vinci here. The Da Vinci of Detroit. You ever heard him called that?
I have not heard him called the Da Vinci of Detroit,
yeah,
but I like that.
And you know what? I think I read that somewhere. I'm pretty sure I have, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of clever. So
another thing they throw around for this guy is the father of automotive design.
Very good. Very good. So most people right now probably have a guess of who we're talking about, probably from the title of the episode. But we're talking about Harley J. Earl, who was the first vice president of design at General Motors. And this comes to us from a listener suggestion. And it's a listener that he writes in often. Boucher.
Ah, yes.
Remember Boucher?
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? Oh, one quick side note here.
What's that?
I'll read his email first here, but you know, this is the email that Boucher wrote about missing his Buick Roadmaster and, you know, talking about Buicks that he's owned in the past, nailheads.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a heroes podcast on people like Harley Earl, Red Nichols, people that changed the American auto scene. And I thought it was a great idea. We told him,
yeah,
we'd do it. We're doing it right now. But I saw some videos online of Boucher doing some burnouts in, I think it was Sturgis.
Really?
Yeah, he sent a link
awesome.
Along.
Yeah.
He sent a link along with some of this stuff. It was pretty cool. It was neat to see him on his bike and kind of doing his thing. It was a lot of fun. So thanks for passing that stuff along. We like watching that.
And Boucher, obviously, we thought you had a great idea. And when it comes to automobiles, especially automobile design, there's a good question here, Scott. Is there a better example of heroism than Harley J. Earl? I'm not sure if there is.
I don't know. I think this guy is one of those guys that, you know, whether you know it or not, he has changed the American auto scene or the worldwide auto scene forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the stuff that he came up with, it can't be reinvented at this point.
Yeah.
It often is. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like the stuff is just, it's common use now, and you don't have any idea that it's there, but it was his design or his thought or his bringing it forth that made it happen, and you know, or he approved the direction of it, you know,
yes,
something like that. But you know, you'd be surprised at how many of these advances, you know, whether they're decorative, whether they're functional, whether you know whatever they happen to be, performance,
even conceptual,
even conceptual. These are all Harley Earl designs, and I guess we could just kind of go through what the man did from the very beginning right to the end, and we'll see where it takes us.
Well, let's give these folks a little bit of bang for their buck, Scott. Let's start just a bit before the beginning, and let's talk about...
Before the beginning?
Let's talk about cars.
Okay.
Bro,
yeah, sure.
All right. So,
let's talk about cars, dude.
So, okay. Once upon a time, mm-hmm. after the invention of cars, the industry was very, 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 very different. Actually add about 9 more varies
That's
on there.
That's very different.
Yeah. And one of the biggest differences is probably summed up in Henry Ford's famous quote. When someone said, hey, what color do model – was it Model Ts or Model As?
Model T.
Model Ts, right. So what color could I get a Model T in? And his famous reply, of course, was, you can have it in any color you would like so long as it is black.
Mm-hmm.
I am paraphrasing, so
– yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And really, that sort of encapsulates a mentality in automobile manufacturers at the time. And note, listeners, that we're not saying automobile designers yet.
No.
And the idea here was that we're living in a world with so many innovations in such a short span of time. You've got assembly lines, you've got marketing, you've got the stage of innovation where you have a working prototype and you bring it down so that it costs a reasonable amount to manufacture.
Exactly.
So we have cars everywhere. And if Henry Ford gets his way, they all look the same.
Exactly the same. Because that's the easiest way to produce them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, right?
Right.
That makes perfect sense. But where's the style? That's the problem. See, yeah. There was no style at the point. And you may think that, you know, the Model Ts, they have great style. But the truth is that those were built out of carriages originally,
mm-hmm.
you know, horse-drawn carriages. You can see the shape of a horse-drawn carriage within a Model T easily. The shape of, you know, the hood, the fenders, everything is, it's very functional, very, how do I want to say this, Ben? Am I going to get it backwards? I'm going to say the form fits the function.
The form follows the function.
That's right. Yeah. And there was no style involved with it. It had nothing to do with the way the car looked. Had nothing to do with the way the car appeared in the outside. People didn't care if you had a car that looked sleek and fast. They just cared that you had a car.
Because which was amazing.
A horseless carriage. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, which was incredible that you had a car. Mm. And if you look at cars from the past, you know, prior to, I'm going to say, just 1927.
Yeah.
Take for instance. Prior to 1927, really, it was strictly all about function and the form that followed that function.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No. I don't want to steal your thunder.
No, please do.
I think it's really cool that you've pointed out how people looking back at a Model T now would say, oh, what style Henry Ford had. Because in a very literal way, Harley Earl is the reason that you probably thought a Model T had style. Because, well, okay, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil it.
All right. Well, let's, you know who Harley Earl was, of course. He's born way before the automobile. He's born in 1893.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was a carriage builder. So he had experience with, he and his son had experience with coach building for horseless carriages. Horse-drawn carriages at that point. However, in around 1908, his father founded something called Earl Automobile Works. And this is right at the dawn of automobiles, right at the very early part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Earl, who was going to Stanford, Harley, who was going to Stanford University at the time, left to work for his father in this automobile works.
Yes.
Now this is like a shop, a carriage building shop, and you know they do maintenance and that type of thing. It's not really a manufacturing company.
Right. It's by no means a large factory.
No. So he's working on. He's working on cars of the day, the early cars of the day, and he's already starting to bring a little bit of his flair to the trade, I guess. Even when they were coach builders, when they were horse-drawn coach builders, I guess when Harley was really young, he would use model clay to build what he thought coaches and cars should look like, but not what they do look like. So if you could find one of those old clay models, can you imagine what that would be worth? But, I mean, this is just kind of the background to what led to all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was right around that time when Earl Automobile Works was purchased by a Cadillac dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, Earl was able to meet the president of the, at the time of General Motors, and that was Alfred P. Sloan, who lived in New York at the time. He worked out of New York, wasn't in Detroit. And he said that he was going to put, and he was impressed with Earl, you know, impressed with his designs and what he'd been doing on paper and what he'd been doing for customers, because they had been building custom bodies for the stars of the day.
Yeah.
A lot of movie stars, even.
Like Fatty Arbuckle, Al Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a few of them. And yeah. I saw some of the bodies. They look, you know, unique, different. Mm-hmm. And you got to remember at this time, like if you bought a Cadillac or something like that, you would buy it from the factory with whatever coachwork was equipped with it. And then you take it to a coach builder like Earl Auto Works and mm-hmm. have them custom coach build it for you. So, that was what they were doing. And this is how, Alfred Sloan, came in contact with Earl, and he liked so much what he was doing that now remember, Earl is just 33 years old at this point, right? This is 1927. He let Earl design, a new mark for them, the LaSalle body, which was a kind of a co-mark for Cadillac at the time. And if you look at the 1927 LaSalle, that was designed by Harley Earl. Yes. And this was the first time that anybody had really taken the time and effort to style a car strictly for the way, you know, just for the way it looked, the way it so it's pleasing to the eye.
The aesthetic. And this, yeah. And Scott, when you're saying that, let's go ahead and underline that in people's heads, because he made the first what we would consider a design department today. I think he called it art and color.
Oh, that was GM. Yeah, that's
that
a GM.
GM.
That's
yeah.
a GM. But yeah, he's the one who started this entire design process. You know, when you hear that, you know, companies have art and design groups, or they have, you know, graphic design departments, or, you know, whatever the design department is called at a corporation. This is the very start of it. It was never around prior to this. It was only the engineers who designed a covering for the engine area, a covering for the wheel, which was the fender skirts.
Now, before we get to the LaSalle, let's point out that people were not all universally receptive to this idea.
Oh, no.
As a matter of fact, they did everything but call him stupid, almost.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they said it when he wasn't around, but we need to make clear that a lot of people were not betting their money on Earl's big idea, Earl's big vision. At least that is until the LaSalle came out.
Yeah, until the LaSalle came out. And then that car apparently just sold like hotcakes. It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It was one that, you know, everybody wanted to get a glimpse of this thing. It was just remarkable styling for its day. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the 27 LaSalle, it looks beautiful, of course, but many, many cars have that similar look from that similar era.
Yes.
And that's all because of Harley Earl.
Mm-hmm.
Everything prior to that point had, more of a functional form-fitting type of covering, you know, just a sheet metal covering with rivets. And, it was just a real simple time for design prior to that.
Yeah. And so the people who were doubting Thomas's, had to eat a little bit of humble pie, right?
Sure.
But the story doesn't end there, because these people, and by people, I mean, consumers as well as manufacturers, especially manufacturers, actually, they noticed when these celebrities started buying, LaSalle's like hotcakes, and they noticed when more and more customers were responding with just unprecedented enthusiasm, that they saw, they smartened up a bit and said, hey, this is actually a great idea. And I think, as we're about to see, that was only the beginning.
Yeah, that's right.
For Mr. Earl.
Because in 1937, that's when they officially renamed the art and color division. They renamed it the styling division of General Motors.
Yes.
So this is like about 10 years later, and I think they took a lot of flack internally about that. You know, that he was in the picture boys, or the pretty picture boys, or something like that. You know, I read a lot about that. That, you know, he took a lot of guff from the guys inside GM about it early on.
They mocked him. Yeah.
They did, but he was driving sales. I mean, he's unbelievable, successful designs. You know, so there's a lot to come out of that division. These are just, I'm going to go through a few of these real quick, Ben.
Yeah, let's do a list.
But, you know what? They call him the Da Vinci of Detroit for a reason. He designed and invented a lot of different, aspects of cars that you probably find familiar at this point. one thing that he maybe, I don't know, maybe the most remarkable, can you really even say that about the guy? The most remarkable thing, but maybe
it's
not.
It's tough. I'll hear you out.
The 1938 Buick Y-Job was the first ever concept car. Prior to that, no concept cars. There was nothing out there that was designed just strictly to get the public's opinion on a vehicle, you know, without any basis, you know, saying we're going to definitely produce this. Otherwise, it was, here's our new model line, take it or leave it.
And Scott, concept cars are kind of, to say the least, an out-of-the-box idea.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They really are. I mean, to say the least, you're right. I mean, those are, that's all they are really, is to completely think out of the box and completely say, you know, here's what we're thinking about in the future. What do you think?
Yeah, but the logic there is unassailable, because if it comes down to an issue of money, you know, if people want to buy a car, they're more likely to buy your car if you can show them an actual vehicle and not a drawing.
True. True, you know. Or features of the vehicle that you could expect to see in in the future. So, anyways, that car, the Y-Job, which was the very first. Now, if you look at the 38 Buick, the Y-Job, you'd notice that, well, it looks a lot like the cars of the day, right? Okay, well, not necessarily. It looks like cars about 10 years later. And I read one little funny story about this that I think it was a press reporter, Newsline reporter. He saw one of these, and this is a 1938 model that they brought out, right? This guy apparently hadn't seen the car ever. This young guy, it was a younger press person, spotted the car in 1949. So this is 11 years later.
Yeah.
Reported it as being the 1949 new Buick.
Wow.
That's how advanced this car was. So, the 38 Buick looked like the 49 era of cars for everybody else. And, I mean, when you look back at it, it looks like an older car, of course, but then when you realize what was around in 1938 and what this car looked like, it's really remarkable, but a lot of cool features to it. He actually developed tail fins.
Yes.
Tail fins were one of his designs. Came from, of course, aircraft. That was his, inspiration, I guess. He borrowed designs all the time. And apparently made no bones about it that, you know, if I like it, I'm going to include it in my design. I'm going to, you know, change it, make it my own, but I like it.
I think it was Picasso who said that great artists steal.
Oh, sure.
Oh, and I've got to tell you, there is, in the span of this man's astonishing career, he did one thing. He had one innovation with which I disagree or take
what's
issue.
What's that?
He got rid of running boards, Scott.
Yes, he did. He got rid of running boards.
And that's the only thing. I want to put that out there. I know it's purely my preference.
No, you know what? I like running boards as well. Do they have a place on modern cars? No, not really, but.
No, they don't.
But they do look cool.
They do.
They do look cool. Yeah, but, you know, this is a time of advancement, time moving on, and then he just happened to be there at the right time.
Let's do, you want to go through some of them?
Yeah, well. How about a couple more cars, and then we'll we'll get into just a list of things, because there's some remarkable ones here. All right, this is long after the Buick Y-Job, but in 1951, you know this car I'm going to talk about, the Buick LeSabre.
Ah.
Oh my gosh, this was Harley's personal vehicle. Now he drove the Y-Job as a daily driver after that. Now, can you imagine driving around in a concept car for, I don't know, what is it, 12 years?
A future car, basically.
Yeah, a future car. He then designed and built this 1951 Buick LeSabre, which is just an awesome looking car. I mean, it still makes the concourse tour. It was his car. There's only one. Just a beautiful, beautiful car. I think it's at the GM Heritage Center now. I'm pretty sure. Just to give you an idea of what this thing involved. I mean, it had heated seats, which were 30 years earlier than any other heated seats in the industry. It had a rain sensitive top then. That if a drop of rain hit a grid that was sensitive to rain, it would close the hard top. I'm sorry, close the soft top.
It was a soft top.
But so that's, I mean, just take a look at the Buick LeSabre from 51, and you'll get an idea of just how cool this thing was. Another thing that he was the proud father of, Corvette.
Yes. Corvette.
Yeah, Corvette. He was influenced by English and European sports cars of the day. He went to a race, I guess. I think it was Watkins Glen. And he was in his LeSabre, as a matter of fact. And I think he was just blown away by the way the people were so gung-ho about the make and mark of their car. And, you know, just you know, the MGs of the day and the Austin Healeys. And he was just excited by their excitement, really. And I wanted to start something. They called it Project Opal. And later became the 1953 Corvette, which, of course, Bill Mitchell was involved in. We talked about that in the past as well. So, I mean, there's a ton. He eventually retired in 1958. But all of the 1959 models, I believe, were his cars as well.
Including the 1960. This is what gave me a pause for a second. I heard you say Cor. I thought you were about to talk about the Chevrolet Corvair.
Oh.
Which they started in 57. So he's a year away from retirement,
like
all those poor cops in action movies,
know.
And they start working on that. So even the 1960 model, at least of that vehicle, still has his direct touch. I hope you guys are getting the idea. Scott and I are basically saying most modern automobiles, if not all, maybe all, bear some mark of this man's mind.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in just a moment here because there's a list here. I'm going to quickly, and I do mean quickly, read through this list, and you're going to listen to it and like it. But I didn't mean it that way. I just meant you're going to listen to it and hear some of these things, and you're not going to believe that they came from him so long ago because they seem new.
One person,
that's right. And then I got a little caveat at the end there that I want to share with you that, you know, may even raise your eyebrows further.
Okay.
So look forward to that.
All right, let's go micro machine it.
So you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Clay modeling was his, okay? That never used before that. Wraparound windshields. Two-tone paint. No one had ever used two-tone paint prior to Harley Earl.
Unbelievable.
Tail fins, we mentioned. Heated seats. Turn signals. Turn signals? Come on. Crash test dummies, those were his. He invented crash test dummies, believe it or not. I really hadn't thought about that. let's see. Removable running boards, you mentioned that. Streamline fender and headlamps, that was big because remember before that they were like the carriage lamps on the front.
Yes.
Huge difference there. Built-in trunks. Cars didn't have built-in trunks. They used big cargo things strapped to the back with leather straps. Tie them on. The hidden spare tire. That was all new because they were on the fenders at all times. I mean, even on the, I think on the LaSalle, they were on the fenders. Lowered chassis and center of gravity. One thing I want to mention here is his motto was longer, lower, wider. And longer, lower, wider. If you look at the shape of automobiles from the time that he developed automobiles till the time he retired, they were longer, lower, and wider. And that was all him. And it's still to this day, you know, pretty close. Curved rear windows. Before that, they're all flat glass. Wrap around windshield, same thing, flat glass in the front. If you look back at the Model T's, Model A's, that type of vehicle.
Yeah.
Electric windows, heated seats, keyless entry, hideaway power convertible top. That was his. Concealed filler caps. Before that, they were just caps on the outside of the body, you know, add-on type stuff. Double tail lights. Those are his. Front and rear style built-in parking and turn signals. Mentioned that already.
Yeah.
Steering wheel horn. That's brand new. You used to have to reach out and honk the rubber bulb.
Yeah. Ooga.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I mean, it's like a joke, but steering wheel horn is his, electric horn.
Gift and a curse.
Yeah. grouped instrument in front of the driver for better visibility. It doesn't stretch out across the whole,
whole hood. Down into the shotgun
seat. The dash,
seat.
Yeah. Wider body design. Torpedo style body design and two-tone paint jobs. And that torpedo style, I believe the Daytona 500 trophy still has the Firebird 3 concept car on top.
Yes.
That is the torpedo style body design. And you could see a little bit of that in his LeSabre.
Talking about the Harley Earl trophy?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I guess it would be.
It is named that.
Yeah. Thing. Interesting. Okay. Streamline body, a coupe body. Okay. Streamline door handles for safety. Okay. Those were out on the side as well.
Wraparound radio?
No, I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
He also put in a built-in radio. So thank you, Mr. Earl.
Cool. Very cool. And the radio antenna, the telescoping radio antenna.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is also his. Dashboard design is his, because before it was just very, very functional. Needle-type speedometer. Never done before that. Interior sun visors, Ben. Remember before that they had those giant sun visors that were on the outside of the car? It looked like a, ball cap.
Yeah, it looked like a bill from a ball cap.
It did. It looked like a car was wearing a ball cap. That's what it reminds me of. Mentioned crash test dummies, annual style changes, which meant, you know, they didn't just say, here's our line of cars for the next 10 years. That's it.
Now you can always get the newest one.
And this is a big one. Well, okay. Concept cars, we mentioned that in the Motorama shows.
Yeah.
interchangeable bodies across all GM divisions. Now, that's a huge one because that saved them millions of dollars.
Being able to, billions now.
I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know if you can calculate that, really. Because that idea, every automaker uses that now, where they can interchange bodies with chassis and you know, it wasn't strict, this car, this engine, this chassis is all one. This car, this engine, this chassis is all another. It's now interchangeable, and that's all because of him.
Yeah, it's modular manufacturing.
And one other thing I want to mention real quick.
Yeah.
He was a huge women's rights advocate in the workplace, in the auto industry. And he hired in this design group, women. He knew that they had a flair for something like this. He knew that they had taste. They had, sensibility for things like this. Mm-hmm. And, he was early to recognize that they could definitely help out in the styling area of a car, interior, exterior, color choices, the layout, everything. So, I don't know, good work.
I got to ask you, Scott.
Oh.
One thing. Do you think that he can see in the future?
Do you think he's clairvoyant in some way? He's, no.
Precognitive?
No.
Well, he did envision small cars, and he was laughed out of the room.
That's true. He did. You know, after all these longer, lower, wider cars, he did have the vision for smaller cars as well. You're right.
He said the future is smaller, more efficient compact or smaller, more efficient cars.
You know what? The guy, he just analyzed he just knew what was going on in the auto industry. That's all. He was just one of those guys that happened to know what he's doing that could get it all out while he was there, and we're grateful for it. I mean, really. And you know what? There's one more thing that I wanted to mention, that little caveat that I said that well, I guess he passed away in 1969. Harley Earl did.
Mm-hmm.
He had a stroke. I think he lived in Florida at the time. His wife lived until about 1989, I believe. So another 20 years after that. And there was a guy that did taxes for them, you know, paperwork, that type of thing, you know, the Earl estate. And Earl had given him some paperwork as part of the estate early on that the guy had gone through and found some stuff. And there was another list of additional features that this guy had come up with throughout his time in the auto industry that was sort of unknown. But, you know, some of them were, some of them weren't. But they're attributed to him and his group. And there was like another 43 styling advances that he had directly developed or indirectly developed through General Motors and or his own company, because he formed his own company at a certain point. He's responsible for far more than we're even mentioning here. And that's within just that short span of time that he worked at General Motors.
I want to put in one more thing. Now, listen, Scott, I'm not saying that this guy had some sort of psychic power.
Seems like it.
Sometimes people just have a picture of the whole horizon when they look in a direction, you know, and they see forests instead of trees. And he really is that guy, because he also, said that there's been some, I'm trying to find a diplomatic way to say this, Scott. He also, some people would say, predicted the future financial difficulties of some large manufacturers due to the way their timing was structured as far as responding to what a customer wants, you know, as far as refusing to budge from established traditions.
So he was about quick changes and being able to adapt. I agree. I think that, you know, part of that was the interchangeable body thing that he had come up with. That helped them considerably. I'm sure that sped up time between prototype and production, as well as did the clay modeling, you know, which, you know, before that they would have to build a full model out of, you know, metal or even wood. They were using wood at that point, I think. And it just wasn't as soft. He did full scale models instead of, you know, the small scale models. It was just, he seemed to have this ability to be, I'm not even say one. He was five steps ahead of everybody else.
He
really was, or 10 steps ahead of everybody else. He was a remarkable, remarkable man. And honestly, I feel like, you know, we've said a lot of what he's done, who he was, the vehicles and everything. We're scratching the surface of this guy, as you always do when you try to sum up somebody's life or somebody's career in 20 minutes or whatever we're doing here. But really, if you read deeper into the Harley J. Earl story, I think you're going to find that he's absolutely fascinating. Everything about the guy, really cool.
And if you're okay with it, Scott, I kind of want him to have the last word.
Sure.
Okay, so this is from a this is from something he wrote in 1938. I'm not going to do a voice because I respect the man.
Very good.
Okay. Mention the word art to a room full of people, and most of them will think of a great painting. Some will think of sculpture or architecture. A few of music or literature. But hardly anyone will think of industry. Except, of course, the implication, Harley J. Earl.
Yep, very well said.
And I guess is there – I think we should probably wrap it up then if we got him.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, like I said, just dig a little deeper because there's a lot more out there about him, and I think you'll find it fascinating.
And, Buche, we hope that you enjoyed this podcast as well.
Yeah, I don't know if we're telling Buche anything new because he knows all about this guy already. But,
he does.
Props to him for wanting everybody else to learn about it because he's a fascinating guy. Mm-hmm. Buche and Harley Carroll.
Oh, nice one, yeah. Scott.
You're welcome.
You guys see what a nice guy Scott is? If you want to hit us up, feel free to do so. We are friendly people. We don't bite. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We've got a blog. We work for a website. I mean, we're pretty easy to find. Probably the fastest way to get in touch with us is to send us an email at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.